boy, oh boy, oh boy, 275th time, and we're not slowing down. It's great. We're back here at the Parish of the Patriots. I appreciate y'all coming back again. I realize most of you are repeat listeners, and there is a reason. I like to believe there's a reason. I appreciate you all coming back around. If you are new, I appreciate you giving us a check out. I ask that you listen to the whole thing. We do have a Christian-specific segment that's very roughly in the halfway point of the show. Listen to the whole thing. I think you'll get something out of it. Even if that's not technically your thing, it is geared towards, that's why I put it in its own section. It is geared towards people who are already Christian believers. And, you know, but you might get something out of it. Give the whole thing a listen to before you decide the show sucks and tune out. Then if you listen to the whole thing and say, this nope, not my cup of tea, so be it. It's a one-time deal. I appreciate you coming by. But hopefully maybe you too will become a regular listener of the show. A quick reminder. Now I've been mentioning this before. I'm not, you know, I've probably mentioned it enough times, so I figured I'd go ahead and mention it one more time. Glitchy stuff with the site can't be helped. That just is what it is while Sven's away. The contact us button at the top of the pages doesn't work anymore, because that would take you to the chat room, which doesn't work anymore. So it is what it is. If you need to contact, quote, I'm using quotations with my fingers here. If you need to contact Radio Albion, you can use my email address if you have some question about Radio Albion or something. I can't imagine what you would have a question about, but if you do, that's going to be the contact. That link is set to go to a URL to make things short. I from what I can tell, there's no way to switch it to where it just brings up an email address. And obviously I don't have a URL for my email address or whatever. So anyway, if you didn't, also probably more relevant to all of you, the download, you need to click on where it says download below the player. That'll pop open a new tab and a new player. You can hit your three vertical dots there, and that'll bring you up a good download link. Because the old deal where you could just click on the player, the three dots on the player on the main page, and it put down, that's not working either. It was bound to happen, man. It was bound to happen with me trying to keep this thing cobbled together in Sven's absence. And we all working through it. We're all struggling. If you get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Look on the description page for here for the show. I have one and one thing only. Snail mail. No altcoins. No Bitcoin. No nothing. Learn to address an envelope. It's the best. It's the ultimate privacy coin. Snail mail. It is very much appreciated. And with that having been said, we're going to rip through the listener supporter mailbag this week. Tony, I did get it. No note there, but I did want to let you know I did receive it. And as always, I really do appreciate it. GPD, your donations. I hope your donations increase. I know I'm not the only one in the pews. That's from Mr. T. Thank you, Mr. T. You know, it's an up and down thing, and I don't go on about it. You know, I don't. Some weeks, you know. I've had weeks where nothing comes in. And back in the day, I used to get kind of blackpilled on that, you know? Like, maybe the show really, I joke about it, but maybe the show really does suck. And that's why nothing has come in. I don't do that anymore. In the middle of drinking coffee here, while we do the show, it's part of the homey, the home-like ambiance. It's like we're all sitting on the porch having a visit. I don't let that bother me anymore. It doesn't bother me. You know, because I've been doing this long enough. There's weeks I'm just blown away and I'm like, wow, thank y'all very much. And there's week nothing comes in. It's just how it is. I view it. Anyway, I view it as all coming from the Lord. And the Lord uses y'all and it comes in. I praise the Lord for it. You know, and that's a blessing for y'all because it means y'all are taking part. Y'all are taking part in something God's doing. A blessing from the Lord. It's part of action. I do appreciate it. It just goes up and down. It's all good. I appreciate it. And finally, dear, let's see here. GPD, long time, no right. I'm dealing with cancer issues. I guess the both of us. The Lord has my attention and I'm working on getting his. Hope that you're doing well. You're in our thoughts and prayers. That's from Nick. Thank you very much, Nick. Without knowing specifically what you got going with your deal, there's nothing like that to get your attention back focused. Is it you go through life and life is just full of distractions. you know, things we think are important. And then when they lay something on you like cancer, it gets to just snap you right back into focus. Like you said, the listener says, like you say, you know, Lord's got your attention, because you snaps you back and you realize, man, what am I doing here? You know, what am I doing? And boy, nothing will refocus you like that will. As far as myself, because you asked, still everything's going all right. I'm supposed to, hopefully, I'll go for my cancer scan. I put it off quite a bit. I should be going. I'm scheduled to do that next month, hopefully. I will share those results when I get them. I hope to do it next month. I've put it off several times. I'm going to try to get it done. It's expensive. I just say it's expensive. I don't want to get into that because I'll sound like I'm shilling for money, and I'm not. I'm just saying, if I can afford it, I'm going to get it done, and I will share those results with you. If not, I'll put it off till probably October and try to do it then. It's not a big deal. I'm not using that as a please send money. I'm not. I'm just saying, I will share those results. Nick, I don't know what you got going on with your deal, but I do know where you're coming from. And I just say, yeah, you know, look, I'm not your counselor. I can't promise you much, but I also know sometimes it's hard to talk about some of this with your family. What I'm saying is, what I'm trying to get to, I'll spit it out here in a minute. My email is right here. If you just need to unload and say, this is what I got going on, man, I don't know. You know, I got an ear. I can't tell you I'm going to give you profound wisdom. Don't expect a whole lot, but I can listen. And you're more than welcome to drop me an email if you just need to unload or you know, talk about it, so as to speak. Drop me an email. And, you know, like I say, it's right here on the page. Parish of the Patriots at ProtonMail.com. If you need to do that, just saying, I got an ear, because I do. I know you can't always, you know, when you're with your family and stuff, you're putting up that brave face. You know, I don't know what your situation circumstances are. I don't want to start, you know, applying things to you that maybe don't apply. But I just know that it's a natural thing that around your family and the people around you, you know, sometimes you got more going on underneath than what you're going to tell them. And that can build up, you know. Sometimes it's easier to unload on a stranger. So if you need to do that, by all means, drop me an email. Like I say, don't expect a lot, but I do have an ear. I can listen. So anyway, that gets us through listener supporter mailbag. Thank you all. Once again, I do thank you. I do really appreciate it. It does mean a lot. Right before recording the show, I decided what I was going to talk about here in the first part. Which is pretty standard, and probably most of the time it shows that this guy has no idea what he's even going to ramble about today until like right before the show. It's what we're going to talk about right before the show. Now, what I decided we'd discuss today is going to be kind of American-centric. So, and we have a worldwide audience here at the Parish of the Patriots on Radio Albion. We got a worldwide global audience here. So for our non-American members, you might still find this interesting. It'll give you a little more insight because you hear about these American things. And maybe you don't quite understand, so you still might get something out of them. We'd have a little bit of an interesting start, but it is going to be an American-centric discussion here. And I guess I'll start by, I saw a video the other day of a typical American confrontation over some stupid, silly bullshit. It just amazes me how wrapped up people are. People are so tense. People are so twisted up. This society is so broken. I saw this video, and anyway, it was just such a typical American thing. But what I found interesting is there were people commenting on this. And let me describe the video first. I'm sorry. Let me describe the video first so that we have some context here. And I may go try to find the video again. I probably won't. Honestly, I'll probably be too lazy to do it. But in this video, three guys. There's three guys. You may have seen the videos. This thing got a lot of views. But there are three guys on sport bikes. And they all, of course, have cameras. They all have GoPros going on there. And this guy blows through red light on his bike. You say he couldn't see it because of the sun, whether that's true or not. It doesn't matter. Guy blows through red light. Doesn't cause a wreck or anything, but he did blow through the red light. And he's with two other guys. Anyway, this guy pulls into the gas station to get gas. Subsequently, his other two guys eventually wind up pulling up there as well. Well, when he went through the red light, there was a guy in a pickup truck that seen this and for some reason took it upon himself that he's the traffic light police. He goes whipping up here, rolls his window down, and starts screaming at this guy about, "Don't you ever do that again." It's crazy. And the guy on the bike, he just looks at him and says, "Hey, man, that's my bad. You know, the sun was in my eyes and, you know, blah, blah, blah." And that should have been it. I actually shouldn't have been in at all because I don't know what the hell is wrong with the guy in the pickup. But like I say, everybody's twisted up over crap. I mean, people are just ready to snap. They're crazy. Well, guy in the pickup just takes the guy saying, "Yeah, you know, I'm sorry about that. You know, it was my mistake." Instead of going with that and chalking it up as some sort of win, I don't know what you won. For whatever reason, the guy in the pickup truck decides to escalate it further. He proceeds to get out of the pickup and start really trying to ream the guy on the bike's ass out. Now, the guy on the bike, he's sitting, he's straddled on the bike. He can't do anything. He's standing here straddled on the bike. You know, it would take a minute to get off the damn bike. And the guy on the bike still calmly tells this guy, "Hey, man, you know, chill out." Well, this enrages pickup dude further. Pickup dude slaps the guy. The guy has a helmet on. What he thought that was going to do, I don't know. Well, now, during all of this, the guy's two buddies roll up. One of the guy's buddies sees all this. And I assume, knowing that his buddy's standing there straddled on the bike and can't exactly do anything, he runs around and proceeds to, you know, beat this guy's ass. And yeah, it wasn't a severe beat down. Basically, what real fights wind up often looking like, people flailing around. Guy from the pickup falls on his ass. Long story short, guy from the pickup starts whining about, "I'm calling the police." It's like, you decided to do all of this. And from what I understand, when the police did finally show up, they arrested pickup guy because obviously it was all on video and he was the one that did this. Why am I bringing this up? Because I saw a lot of people, there were people commenting about, you know, defending pickup guy. In one particular comment, somebody said, "Well, the state I live in is a stand-your-ground state." And pickup guy, when those three guys came at him, pickup guy could have pulled his gun, if he had one, and shot them. So this gave me the idea, that comment, actually more so than the video, but I wanted to give the context of it. That comment gave me the idea of what I wanted to discuss today. And that is the question of, do you need a gun? Or probably more accurately, should you have a gun? Okay, overall, I understand that, you know, people talk a lot of shit on the internet. Sometimes that transfers into real life, like with the pickup guy I just described, making a fool out of himself. You know, what are you looking to accomplish here? What are your goals? I understand people talk shit on the internet. You know, "I would do this and I would do that." And most people probably actually wouldn't. But taking people with their words, that person that said that probably doesn't even live in a stand your ground state, so they have no clue how that actually works. But if they did, they're in a lot of trouble. Because if you were pickup guy, when you chose to chase somebody down, you're not the traffic police. You chose to escalate this. You chose assault. Stand your ground is not going to, you are the instigator of the entire situation. Stand your ground is not going, look, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving legal advice, but I do have common sense. And if you have common sense, most of the time you can keep yourself out of a bad situation. But if you think if you were that guy in the pickup, and you think if you did what he did, you're going to be able to go stand your ground law, and the police and the judicial system is just going to wave that off and say, "Oh yeah, he had the right to gun those guys down. How dare they fight him 3-on-1? No, they're going to say, "This whole situation was you. You're the asshole that chased him down. You're the asshole that decided to escalate it and to assault. And then you got your ass kicked. And when you got your ass kicked, you weren't going to take that. So you pulled a gun out and started shooting people. But you're going to go to prison. That's not how stand your ground works. If you think that's how stand your ground works, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So I thought we'd talk a little bit. If you're an American, particularly, should you? You might not need a gun. And when I say you might not need a gun, I mean you may not be the type of person that should be anywhere near a firearm. Now, don't get me wrong. I raised around guns. I grew up in rural Texas. You know, I'm not an anti-gun person at all. I like probably most people in Texas, I got guns. I'm not one of these people I make fun of that act like it's a religious object. But should you? There are people out there, they got no business having no damn gun. I ain't gonna say it. Thought we'd get into this a little bit. Should you? Do you have any business having a gun? Regardless of what state you live in. For starters, understand that the rules for using your firearm, the rules that they give police, they ain't going to give you that. We've all seen these ridiculous videos, and we're going to get into this a little bit here in a minute, too. We've all seen these ridiculous videos where cops overreact and they start mag dumping on somebody, and you're like, man, what's that guy doing? And yet the cop gets away with it because officer safety. I feared for my safety. I've seen any number of randos on the internet who'll sit there and say, well, all I got to do is tell them I feared for my safety. Buddy, that ain't going to work for you. I don't care what state you live in. I live in Texas. Y'all know I live in Texas. And we probably have some of the most, most forgiving gun laws as far as self-defense anywhere in the country. And I'm sorry, just I feared for my safety. That ain't going to get it. Yes, that works for the cops. You're not the cops. You know, it's just how, it's the same thing as how different rules apply for the government as apply for you. And to sit there and whine about it, you better realize that's the reality and act accordingly. If your whole basis for you whipped out your pistol and mag dumped some rando, if your whole basis for justifying that is I feared for my safety and it works for the cops, you're a moron. That's not going to work for you. It's not. Now, if the other guy has a gun or if the other guy has broken into your house, yes, those are legal justifications. You know, if you're wandering around a parking lot and some drugged out homeless dude starts approaching you aggressively, but he doesn't have any weapon in his hand, you get scared and mag dump on him. That ain't going to work. Don't be emailing me about all your justifications and how it should be. I'm telling you, I'm just giving you some good common sense advice. You're not going to use the same excuse the cops use. That ain't how it works. And heaven forbid you live in some shithole like California or New York where they're just looking for an excuse to hang you. Like I say, I live in Texas. That's probably the best state to be in if you have to resort to using a firearm. This is probably the place to be. Minus perhaps Austin. You know, this is probably the place to be. And I'm telling you, in a situation like that, you have a lot of answering to do. Should you own a gun? Do you have any business owning a gun? I think one of the important questions to ask with this is, what is your motivation? What is your motivation? Your justification? What is your reasoning? Why you want to buy a firearm? And this is something you don't need to share with anybody else. You should be able to have an honest look at yourself. And if the answer to that question is fear, because you're fearful, because you're afraid, don't buy a firearm. I mean that. Don't buy a firearm. This is something you're going to have an honest, you should have an honest discussion with yourself and understand that if you're being honest with yourself and it's because of fear, that's not cowardice. You know, cowardice is not fear. Everybody feels fear. Cowardice relates to your action or inaction regarding how you deal with that fear. I'm not going to get off into that today. If your motivation, why you want to go buy a firearm, is at the end of the day, you're scared. Let me tell you something. The most dangerous person, if they're standing there with a gun, is somebody that's afraid. Because if they decide to start popping off rounds, they're not necessarily shooting at a credible threat. They're shooting at their fear. They're trying to make that fear go away. Everybody in the surrounding area that's in the most danger, because that guy's shooting at his fear. He's shooting at a spook. He's shooting at a ghost. He's trying to make that fear. He doesn't like that feeling he's having. That's a dangerous person. Now, that brings me back to us. I was going to circle back to this earlier. These cop videos. We've seen some of these outrageous police videos where they overreact. One of the things that strikes me about that is they have no business with a gun, and they damn sure don't have any business being a cop. Defenders, badge lickers, as I often call them, defenders of that will sit there and say, you don't know. You don't know what our heroes in blue face and go through every day. What I do know is if you're that afraid, you need to find a different line of work. It's fine to be aware of you should be aware of the dangers around you. But most of these videos where you see cops overreacting, the thing that strikes me, because they try to translate that fear into an aggressive stance, and they wind up escalating the situation. But anybody with a good eye for people and a good eye for what's going on quickly looks at that and understands that guy's scared shitless. He's screaming, he's yelling and shouting orders that are half the time incoherent, reaching, touching his gun. The other person's like, what are you doing? Chill out, dude. And he gets more aggressive. People see that and say that, well, that cop sure is angry. No, he's not. A person with a decent eye understands that guy's scared shitless. What's he doing being a cop? What is he doing? Why is he got a gun? Why does he have a badge? When he's that afraid, he needs to find another line of work to be in. Yes, there's a lot of people that shouldn't be cops because they're too afraid. Yes, I know. They face dangers. They go into the job knowing that. If they go into the job afraid of that, then they don't have any business doing that job. A fearful person with a gun in their hand is the most dangerous person you could face. Because again, if they start popping off rounds, they're shooting at that fear. They're not even looking. You see these videos and it's like, 28 cops, unload three mags each of ammo into one guy's limp corpse. And then you find out like only a third of their rounds even hit the guy, even though they were at point blank range, and four other cops got shot by friendly fire. There are a lot of people there that are scared shitless. That's what fearful people do because they're shooting at their fear. They're popping off rounds, their fear. I think you can also apply a general inability to control your emotions. If you're what other people would classify as a hothead, but I don't need a gun. If you're like the guy I'm talking about in the video that for some reason you're having a bad day and you're going to go chase someone down because how dare they run a red light like that's any of your freaking business. And you're going to get more and more. You can't control your anger. And you're going to get more and more inflamed. You don't need to be anywhere near a pistol. You don't need to be anywhere near a firearm. Because you're blinded by your emotions. I always talk about you have these road rage idiots. And people get in these road rage things and wind up shooting out the window of their cars at somebody and they get chased down, they get arrested. And when the cops ask them, well, why did you shoot into that car? They cut me off in traffic, those assholes. Really? You had a gun and your idea was that how dare that guy drive like an idiot? And maybe they were driving like an idiot. I'm sorry, you don't get to shoot somebody because they drive like an idiot. And I always imagine when that person wakes up in jail the next day looking at prison and they're no longer angry, how foolish they must feel. I've often thought about that. When you're mad and you're caught up in the moment, you don't give a shit. Everybody's been there. But to wake up the next day in jail knowing good and well you're facing prison time, and you're not mad anymore, and you're thinking, what the hell was I doing? I was just trying to go down to, Dick's Sporting Goods or some shit. Why didn't I just go? The guy shot into his car. He's out there somewhere right now. Still driving like an idiot. It didn't change his mind. The only thing changed, now I'm going to prison. You ain't got no business. I'm telling you, if you that guy, you ain't got no business. Like so many things in life, if you were making a decision based on emotion, it's probably not going to turn out well. Again, I'm not anti-gun by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm not trying to frame this up like nobody should have a gun. That's stupid. But you need to be able to self-reflect and understand, who you are, what type of person you are. If it ever came down, because let's be honest, what we're talking about is, should you have a firearm for self-defense? And again, 100% agree that that's something people should have if they're the right type of person for that. And honestly, probably a lot of people just aren't cut out for it. If you're going to use a firearm for self-defense, you need to be the type of person who views it as simply a tool. And honestly, it's a tool of last resort. You need to have an understanding, and they do have courses for this. You can still, even though they've got open carries legal now in the state of Texas, you still have to go through the course to get, they, if you take that course, they do kind of teach you some of this, but you need to understand, what circumstances will justify you using your firearm. There are certain circumstances. If you're sitting there and your circumstances are, I think I could make an excuse for this, you probably don't want to be doing that. And it's something that in a high tense emotional situation, you need to be able to make calm, rational decisions. I'm not saying you might need to make those decisions very quickly, and that adds another level of difficulty. You need to make decisions in a situation like that. You're going to need to make a decision very quickly, but you're going to also need to do so calmly and rationally. Again, they're not going to give you the same benefit of the doubt that they give the cops. If that's what you're counting on, you're already behind the eight ball. You're already in trouble. You need to make calm, rational decisions. If somebody has broken into your house, here in Texas at least, you're in pretty good solid ground. If somebody actually is brandishing a weapon and coming towards you, that's stand your ground. You can defend yourself. But if you're in a parking lot, they don't have a weapon, but you don't like the way they're looking at you, if you can get in your car and leave, do that. Your pistol is your last line of defense. That's the last thing you want to be going for. You don't want to put it off too long if the situation warrants it, but at the same time, that's your last resort, not your first. I'm scared, so I'm reaching for my gun. If that's your approach, you're going to get in trouble. I'm just telling y'all, you're going to get in trouble. If you're in a situation and you have an exit, look, I agree. I feel the need to clarify. Look, I agree with stand your ground laws. I agree with all of those things. I agree with having a firearm, for self-defense and defend your property. I agree with all of those things. But if you're in a situation and you do have a way to exit that situation without escalating it, do that. I'm serious. Just do that. Don't sit there and say, well, I can go get in this guy's face. And that would be stand your ground. Look, side on caution. If you have a way, look, if the person pursues you, you look and it's like, instead of letting this escalate, I'm going to go over here and just exit this situation. Well, if that person still comes at you, you've just strengthened. And again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving legal advice. I'm using common sense here. You've strengthened your position as far as if you do have to resort to hoping for the stand your ground laws to protect you, because you were trying to get out of that situation and that person still was coming at you with a weapon or whatever, the case may be. But then again, you're going to go get in that guy's face. Like I said, in the video, the guy was in his pickup. He decided to get out and escalate the situation. I mean, you got people on the internet going, whoa, if you're in a stand your ground state, that guy in the pickup could have shot those guys because he was standing his ground. No, he wasn't. He got out of his truck. He was the aggressor every way you look at it. You know, again, I know that a lot of that's just people shit talking on the internet. I do know that. But there's also a lot of ignorant people that don't understand. And they might think, yeah. You know, stand your ground doesn't mean boost up your ego. Stand your ground isn't going to equate to this guy pissed me off, so how dare he? Doesn't he know how special I am? Ain't the way it works. If you've got a way to exit the situation, do that. Your firearm is your last resort. It is. Your firearm is your last resort. And if you have to use it, you know, you do so with all the consequences in mind, and you want to do so to where you have everything that you can garner, you can gather up in your favor. When these cops go out here and because they're afraid and mag dump on somebody in questionable circumstances, they have the entire system that's going to do everything it can to protect them. When you use your firearm on whatever level of justified situation that you were in, you're going to have that same entire system working against you. You're not the cops. The cops are going to try to protect their own. If it's you, the cops are going to try to jack you up. You know, that whole system that's protecting them, that same system is going to be looking for a way to run you up on a rail. You better have as many circumstances in your favor to justify taking that action. Yeah. And look, there's a scale here. You know, there's a scale here. Maybe, you know, if you have a firearm and you look at yourself and you're honest with yourself, maybe you should keep your firearm at home. It's going to depend on where you live. But like in Texas, as an example, if somebody breaks into your house, you know, like you hear about home invasions and stuff. If somebody breaks into your house, again, I'm not giving legal advice. I always feel like I need to do that disclaimer because of the crazy world we live in. But it, generally speaking, in the state of Texas, once somebody breaks into your house, you know, you're pretty justified. You're going to be fairly justified. You can be, let me phrase this correctly. You're going to be on pretty solid ground. You know, you're going to be on pretty solid ground. So maybe you need to keep your firearm at home. Yes, but what if I'm attacked out on the street or something like that? Again, this comes back to being able to do that self-reflection. For starters, again, they have courses here in the state of Texas that you can take, you know, for your concealed carry permit. And I haven't taken the course. Like I say, we've got open carry now. You can, as long as it's not concealed, you can carry it around legally in the state of Texas. But they do still have the course, and they teach you in the course, you know, about these things. And they do so for a reason. Well, in other words, what I want to say is, you say, well, what if I'm out and about and I'm attacked? Okay, where's that going to happen? What kind of places are you going to? You know, because most of the places I go to, there's a very small chance that something like that's going to happen. You know, I mean, anything can happen. But most of the places, I'm not going to places. You know, the malls in the city, I ain't going to no mall over here in Dallas or something, because I know what the malls are like. I'm not going there. You know, groups of youths roaming about. I'm not going there. I don't go to places. I avoid places to where I could wind up, you know, being in a bad situation. Don't. You know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You know, an ounce of good judgment on what sort of places you're going to and where you're going to be is worth a whole case of your favorite ammunition for your favorite caliber of gun. Don't go to those places. Being good, find out what, if you're in an area you're unfamiliar with, find out what those areas are like. You know, it's like over here, they have State Fair of Texas every year. You know, it's kind of a tourist destination. So, you know, yeah, you probably know State Fair, they have that big Tex out there, you know, the big mannequin, giant mannequin thing. You know, they have the State Fair of Texas. Most people that aren't from here don't know that's in a shithole area. I mean, you just going there, you're putting yourself in a bad situation. I would never go. I've never been to the State Fair of Texas. Well, how do you live in Texas? You ain't never been to the State Fair of Texas because it's in a shithole. The whole area is bad. I'm not going to that area. I'm not going to make the decision to go to that area where bad things can happen. Not doing it. Don't go there. Don't get into that position in the first place. This is the best thing you can do. This is the best thing you can do. Again, keep yourself calm. You should be able to keep yourself emotionally calm. I'm just going to kind of relay a story for myself. And this has been, I don't remember, here a while back. It wasn't that long ago. I was out clearing brush somewhere, and it was very, very snaky. It was very, very snaky, and as such, I had a firearm with me in case I found a copperhead. You know, because copperhead bites you, and you're out somewhere, you ain't going to make it back to town. You're going to be dead. And I'm going back. I'm coming back home. Obviously, I'm bringing my firearm back with me. I'm coming back home. Well, I get pulled over. It wound up they were just pulling me over to let me know I had a brake light out. It was no big deal. And give me a ticket. Cop wasn't a dick or anything. But the cop comes up, and I'm chill. And the cop is like, you know, in typical round, you know, I need to see your license. Do you have insurance? Before I did anything, I just looked at him. And I'm not a badge licker. I'm not one of those people that, yes, officer. No, sir, officer. I hate that shit. Cops pull me. If a cop pulls me over, I'm just talking to him like I'm talking to you. I ain't doing that, you know, oh, officer. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm old. I'm not calling somebody half my age, sir. Piss on that. Just because you got a badge, I ain't doing that shit. But he gave me the routine. I need to see your license and all that. And I looked at him and I said, okay, but before I do that, let me just tell you, I do have a firearm in here. So I don't want you seeing that. And I told him, I just like this. I said, I don't want you seeing that and getting all excited. I'm going to get my license and stuff out. And the guy was chill. You know, this cop wasn't afraid. This cop was just, oh, that's cool. Okay, thanks for letting me know. Go ahead and get your stuff. You see, that's how these interactions should take place. You shouldn't be excited. Shouldn't be emotional. Shouldn't be jumping around. Chill out. If everybody's chill, everything's going to work out. Anyway, this show is going to be so ridiculously long. It's not going to be funny. I got to wrap up on that note. Look, everybody's going to make their own decisions for themselves. You know, whether if you're an American, you know, whether or not you have a firearm for self-defense, it's your decision to make. I really would encourage you to reflect on where you're coming from with that. And again, there'd be some middle ground, like maybe you need to get a firearm for self-protection, but you need to keep it at home because you get out and about. If you're somebody that gets really mad because someone cuts you off in traffic, you probably don't need to have a gun. If you can't control your emotions, you need to reflect. Because if you do something stupid and wind up in prison, that's just not on you. It's going to affect your family and the people you care about too. If you look at yourself and you honestly say, yeah, I'm capable of controlling my emotions, and then good, go to it. You know, it's a dangerous, it's crazy. People are nuts out there. They're doing crazy ass stuff. I understand. It's crazy clown world. It's just very understandable to want to have a way to defend yourself if you wind up in a bad situation. But it's something you should be able to approach with reality. This isn't a Hollywood movie, you know, and you're not the action star. You need to be able to look at these things realistically and keep yourself out of a bad situation. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. This show is going to be retarded long. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. Without further ado, let's go get in there and fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. And as we get into this week's Christian specific segment, we're going to roll right back into the listener supporter mailbag. Dear Grandpa Dan, I just want to thank you and Matt and everyone at Radio Albion for your good work. I really like the Christian specific part of the show, and I should try to give you some ideas to talk about. One thing that you could discuss, if you haven't already, is how God expects more from those that he gives more to. For example, he demands more from people who have been given greater knowledge of him than those who live in more remote areas of the world or for other reasons hardly know anything except the name of Jesus Christ. What may be excusable for some in his eyes may be a graver sin for others whom he expects more of. Anyway, I hope you stay at it for a long time to come. May God bless you, and I'll write you again soon. Keep the faith. And that's from Charles. Thank you very much, Charles. And you are right. What is, for those who are given much, much is expected. When the Lord gives us knowledge about certain things, what do we do with it? Jesus said nobody lights a lamp and then hides it under a basket or puts it under their bed so no one can see. What's the point of lighting the lamp? I'm hesitant to do so. I'm going to use myself as an example, just because it's the easiest way to illustrate. And please don't interpret it in any way, shape, or form as like I'm bragging about myself, because heaven knows I'm not. But when we do this Christian specific segment, when I do the Christian specific segment, we have these discussions. I don't have this thing where, well, I sit around and work up a script for what we're going to talk about. All I do is I live my life with nobody around seeking the Lord and reading my Bible and pray and try to understand. And when I think I have my mind to a certain extent wrapped around something, I'll write that down. And when it's time to record, I will share that. Simple as. I'm just sharing what I believe I've come, you know, what I've come to understand. I'm sharing that knowledge. And that is lighting the lamp, and you share that information. Now, obviously, I do that here on this show. You don't have a show. Y'all don't have a show. But when you take the information and knowledge of the Lord, that when you come to understand something about him, you're going to naturally apply that to your life. You know, you can start. Jesus said, if you love me, because there's always somebody mouthing off about, I love you, Lord. I'll do this. I'll do that. Jesus said, if you love me, you'll do what I've told you to do. You'll follow my commands. You'll follow what I have explained to you, the instructions I have given. You're going to do that. If you really do, you're going to take that action. Now, if you do so, when you have more knowledge, when the Lord has given you understanding on something or whatnot, you're going to live your life that way. And you know what? Other people are going to see that. Without you saying anything, without you telling them, you know, let me tell you about Jesus, they're going to see the way you're living your life. And that in and of itself can be a testimony, you know, for that knowledge. You're putting the knowledge into action. Again, if you get some knowledge or understanding about the Lord and you just keep it to yourself, well, I'm not going to share this with anybody. You're not putting it into action. You know, it's the same with faith. Faith is deeds. Faith is action. You know, faith that's just words is nothing. It's just empty. Understanding and knowledge about the things of the Lord are, you know, without action, without putting them into place in your life, this is also empty. Now, I realize I haven't really completely answered, you know, gotten into what you've suggested in the topic here, because I've got something else I want to talk about. And in so doing, I think we're going to kind of get into what you've suggested talking about as far as, you know, people being responsible, having more responsibility on them with greater knowledge versus somebody that doesn't know any better. I think as we get into what I intended, what I kind of have jotted down here to talk about, I think as we get into that, we'll kind of maybe, hopefully, we will answer that as we go along. One of the things you have, moments in your life, I think everybody does. You have moments in your life that stick with you, you know, that are kind of, they're pivotal. And your walk in faith should be that. There should be times in your life when you really come to understand something, you come to know something, and those things stick with you. And oftentimes those things are things nobody else knows about, and it's not necessary for everybody else to know about. But you come into an understanding. When I was very young, probably in my teenage years, You know, the Lord revealed something to me through somebody else, by the way. But the Lord revealed something to me, and to this day, it has stuck with me. And that is to focus on who you are. You should focus, as you walk in your faith, focus on who you are and not on what you're not, not on who you aren't. I think one of the pitfalls for believers is you will wind up focusing on who you're not. As a Christian believer, I think a lot of Christian believers who mean well and are seeking the Lord spend way too much time focused on sin and not on who they are, not on who they're supposed to be, not on what the Lord, you know, on who they are before the Lord. Now, let's delve into this, and I think hopefully I will articulate exactly what I mean. Focus on who you are, not on who you are. We want to do better. We want to overcome sin. This is part of our struggle. But it's a mistake in that struggle to make sin the focus. If all you're thinking about is not doing something, if you're struggling with sin in your life, whatever that may be, and all your focus, you just focus on, man, I've got to stop doing that. I want to make sure I don't do that. I don't want to do that sin. You're not focusing on the Lord. You're not focusing on who you are. All your focus is centered on sin, and it will ultimately become a temptation for you because you've made it a centerpiece of your life. All of your focus is on that negativity. All of your focus is on that sin. How's your focus going to be on what you don't want to do instead of over here on what you should be doing? You understand what I'm saying? Your focus should be on what you are going to do. The common mistakes I've seen, you know, and I say this and I don't want to sound like I'm full of myself, because believe me, I'm not. But one of the common mistakes I see Christian believers make that mean well is they will start getting into this thing of, oh, well, this sin, you know, they start talking about sin. This sin is worse than this sin. And if you do this, well, it's not as bad as if you do that. And if this is a bad sin, but, you know, I think it's, you know, it's kind of, there's extenuating circumstances with this sin. And I think God would understand. And you know, if you do this other sin, that's way worse. And they start trying to create some sort of, I don't know, sliding scale of sin. There's extenuating circumstances. There's a reason I'm doing this sin. I can explain this to the Lord. Most Christians have this viewpoint of judgment. Is you're in some sort of American courtroom and you're standing there and Jesus is your defense attorney and the Father is the judge and he's waiting. He's just standing there looking for an excuse to drop the gavel on you and kick you off to prison. And you're hoping you've got the best defense lawyer money can buy, and you're hoping the defense lawyer can make an excuse for you to get you out of it. That's not it. Absolutely is not it. If you look at Judaism, the whole thing is legalese. It's like they take and say, oh, well, these are the rules of God. Now, here's all the legal technicality trickery we can use to get around that. You know, we're going to get around that and trick God and trip him up because we have this technicality. We have a rule, and see, if you interpret it this way, then that doesn't apply. It's not a courtroom. You look at you're faced, you stand before God essentially, and you're faced with yourself and who you are. Who you are, what you've done, good, bad, in between, with no excuse making. There's no extenuating circumstances because you're looking at yourself and what you've done without all the bullshit excuses. You see it. At the end of the day, it's choice. We have choices. Yes, the devil will try to convince you. He'll lie to you, do everything he can, but it's always going to be your choice. When you stand before the Lord, you're looking at yourself without all of the justifications, but I did it because it was a choice. And you have to face that. This is judgment. Judgment is having to stand before the Lord and look at yourself for who you are, the things you've done, good, bad, in between, without any of the excuses and reasons. And let me explain it. There's no explaining. You get to see it for what it is. And all it's either good or ugly or whatever the case may be. That is what it is. I do believe this. And by the way, I believe that lines up with the Orthodox view of that in the Orthodox Church, because I've heard Dr. Johnson mention that before as well. And I agree 100% with that viewpoint, that is what it is. Not standing in a courtroom. You're looking at yourself and you understand what you've done. You have no excuse. All of that justification nonsense is stripped away. You're looking at yourself for who you are. Now, as believers, this is center point for who we are as Christian believers, because this whole walk in our faith and coming to understand the Lord is going through that very process. And I know I've probably said this before. I know I have, but it bears repeating. The center point, what we are doing in Jesus Christ, is going through that process. Your entire life as a Christian believer is a process of growing as a person, growing spiritually, maturing spiritually, growing in your faith. You are going through judgment all your life. Again, that means you're going through the process of seeing what you do, good, bad, and in between, for what it is. You know, constantly understanding that, you know, no, you're not doing these sins because some external force just is more powerful than you and it's forcing you to do that. And even though you don't want to do it, you're just too weak and you can't keep from doing it. That external force, it's just so powerful. It's just you making a decision. You decided to do that because you wanted to. You thought you'd derive some sort of pleasure and it was worth it. That's why you decided to do that. Period. And you just as simply, you can also make the decision not to do that. See, you're going through judgment your entire life. That's why we're doing this. That is what Jesus Christ enabled us to do, is to go through this process, which was God's original intent in creating man to begin with. That's why he is the completion. He's the completion of the law and the prophets, because this was God's original intention by creating man, so that we could be a spiritual and mature being who is actually ready to live in his kingdom. We're going through that. Your life is a matter of looking and self-introspection, looking at yourself, understanding, coming to terms with why you do the things you do, and you're going through that judgment process. Now, when the day of the Lord comes, when you leave this world, are you going to have to do that again? No, you've already gone through that. And that's why, as believers through Jesus Christ, we're kind of bypassing that whole thing. Because we've already gone through. God isn't going to make you do it again. You're living your entire life essentially going through judgment, because you're constantly looking at yourself and getting rid of, weeding out the bullshit excuses and extenuating circumstances, whatever the crap you're making up to justify your sin. You're constantly working on stripping that away and growing spiritually, maturing. Because of Jesus Christ, we're able to do that. It is the fulfillment of God's original intent and original plan. And as such, yeah, when the day of the Lord comes, which again is going to come for you when you leave this world one way or the other, you exit time and you're at the day of the Lord, well, you don't got to go through judgment. You've already done that. God's not going to make you, okay, let's do the same thing again. He doesn't do the same thing over and over again. You've already gone through that. You went through that your entire life. Now, people who haven't done that, yes, they've got to stand then and go through that process. And doing it all at once is going to be a lot more of a severe, a much more of a harsh experience than spreading it out over your lifetime and working through that. Does that make sense? You spending your lifetime working through that, it's going to be a whole lot better than you just la-da-da going along and just, you know, well, at least I'm not doing this sin and I can do this sin and just go about my life. And then all of a sudden the day of the Lord comes upon you like a thief in the night, death comes. And now all of a sudden at once, all of that stripped away, and you got to see yourself for who and what you are. We want to do that. We're doing that now. We tend to judge ourselves more harshly, I think, than maybe others do. We tend to judge ourselves. We hold ourselves to a somewhat higher standard. And there's nothing wrong in a sense with that. But understand, this struggle, this process, it will not end until we leave this world. You're never going to reach that destination in this lifetime. That's why it is such a leap of faith to walk in the Lord and to go through this, because you're not going to get there in this lifetime. You're not going to hit a point 20, 30 years from now and go, wow, I've accomplished it. The day you breathe your last, you will still be in going through that process. You know, it's like taking a journey and knowing that you're actually, you know, not going to reach your destination, but you make the journey anyway. It's a leap of faith. You're not going to attain the goal in this life, and yet we do it anyway. I've had people, and I'm sure y'all have too. You'll have people, and they're really unhappy with their lives, you know? If you've ever known anybody that's very unhappy with their lives, and they'll tell you. They'll tell you how unhappy they are. Or they don't even have to tell you. They're obviously very unhappy people. They don't like their lives. And if you have a discussion with this person, and they get off into why they're unhappy with their lives, you'll usually wind up with a whole long list of all the reasons they're unhappy with their lives. And those reasons usually amount to, just in summary, is the problem with everybody else. This person did this one time, and this person did that one time, and blah, 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 and all these things other people did to me. That's why my life sucks. Man, I'm going to tell you, your life, good, bad, in between, right where you are today, the person you are, the circumstances in your life, by and large, for the most part, you are just looking at the result of all of your accumulated decisions. And the rest is justifications. Yes, there are external things that happen, but those tend to be one-off things. Your overall condition of your life is the result of the accumulated decision. You look at somebody and they're miserable, unhappy with their lives. You're looking at the result of the decisions they've made in their lives. There's other people who've went through the same thing and they're not miserable, but they've made different decisions. You have people that be like, it's all in how you view the world. No, it's all in the decisions you make. It's all in the decisions. If you're looking at your life and you're not happy with who you are, understand that where you are is a result of your accumulated decisions. Now, if you look at this honestly and face it honestly, that means you can change your life at any time. We follow patterns in our decision making. We all do. Every one of us, you, me, we all do it. We have a pattern of decision making. You stop and look at your life and you say, my life sucks. I don't like this life. I'm miserable, whatever. Then you're going to have to find a way to wrap your mind around and understand your pattern of decision making. And you have to break that pattern. You have to break that pattern of decision making and go somewhere else. And if you're not able, if you're busy making excuses, justifications, and trying to figure out how it's just everybody else's fault, you're not going to be able to break that pattern of decision making and go in a different direction. Your life is because you've got a pattern of decision making and you make decisions in this pattern, and this is the result. And as long as you continue down there, and if you continue, just everything is the reason all these people are doing this and that and the world sucks, whatever the case may be, you're not going to break out of your pattern of decision making, and you're not going anywhere. You're not going to grow. You're not going to become more spiritually aware. You're not going to become closer. You're just going to keep doing what you're going to do, and you're going to keep getting those same results. Likewise, on the flip side of that, look at your life. When you get down on yourself as a believer, and it's easy to do, because as you mature, you become less okay with sin. You know, when you're early on in the faith, or perhaps before you came to the faith at all, sin didn't really bother you. You know, I mean, even early in your faith, you know, you might know something's wrong, but that doesn't bother you. But it's a natural thing that as you progress in the faith and you grow in the faith and you grow closer to the Lord, the more sin bothers you, the more you become acutely aware of your own failings, of your own sin, and the less satisfied you are. When you're young in the faith or you haven't come to the faith at all, it doesn't bother you a bit. But as you mature, these things are going to bother you. They do. They bother you. And it's easy to get down on yourself. And this comes back to my original point, which is when you got to stop and focus on who you are. You get focused on the sin and you lose sight. Stop for a minute and step back. And that's why I say this is the flip side of what we were just talking about. Flip back and look at your life and say, well, who am I? Well, who am I? What is the accumulated decisions? And you look at your life and say, well, you know, time and time again, I have chosen to live a life of seeking the Lord, seeking greater understanding, seeking knowledge of Him, and trying to do what I can. That is who you are. These sins, they're always going to be with you as long as you're in this world. That's a fact. But it's not going to change who you are. Your accumulated decisions, what you've decided to do, the direction you have decided over and over and over again, the sin is almost irrelevant in the sense that when you look back over your life, yeah, you sinned. And every time you repented of that and attempted to do better, you made that decision over and over to keep working at it, to keep getting closer to the Lord. That's who you are. So if you all struggle with sin, that's all fine, but that should never be the focus. Don't forget who you are. This is who you are. You have chosen over and over in your life that no, you are a man of God. You're going to walk in the ways of the Lord. Sin is going to be with you. That doesn't have anything to do with it per se. That's just part of the struggle. As long as you're in this life, you're going to struggle with it on some level or another. Don't focus on that. Remember who you are. Keep your eye on the goal. Keep your eye on what you're doing here. Sin cannot take that other away from you. It distracts you. You can get all confused. It doesn't change who you are. That's what Jesus said. Nobody can snatch one from his hand. You're accounted for. It doesn't change who you are. Don't give it that power over you. And one of the cringe things I've heard in churches before, I know I've mentioned this before as well. I've mentioned a lot of things before, and it doesn't stop me from doing it again. But I've heard things in churches before, and they will say, if it's not growing, it's not godly. There's a grain of truth in it. I've picked on this before, because whenever they say that, they mean somehow that you need to give more money to the church. We need a newer, fancier building. We need this. We need to do that. You know, innocent, we grow. We got to get the congregation bigger. So we got to be more inclusive. And I always mock that because it's silly. However, the element of truth in that applies to yourself. You should be growing. You should be always growing. And sometimes that growth is slow and it's hard to see. But we're constantly growing. Like I said, it's hard to see because you get so caught up in the day-to-day struggle. I myself have sat down before and just feel like, man, you know, what? I ain't getting anywhere. You know, I'm, what am I doing? You know, I should be in a much better place now spiritually than where I'm at. And yet, here I am. Man, you know, there must be something wrong with me. And when you hit those times, stop for a moment and look back at your life. Where were you at 10 years ago, 20 years ago? And I can guarantee you, spiritually, you look back and be like, man, I didn't have a clue back then. You know, I didn't understand. I thought I had a pretty good understanding of the Lord. I didn't understand nothing. I have a much greater understanding now. You know, this is a process that takes your entire life. It's not something you're going to whip through. And in a week, you've got this whole following Jesus thing down. And I got it down now. Yeah. Every church, everywhere, when you know, I'm talking about like when you go to a church and you know, they'll have somebody walk up to the front. I don't know if they still do this. They have somebody walk up to the front and say, I've decided to accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior. And they do this whole thing, you know, and usually then they schedule a baptism, whatever. I wish every church that when people do that, the pastor, priest, whatever, would sit them down, you know, and explain to them whatever sins you have in your life. They're not going away with this. You're not going to wake up tomorrow and now you no longer struggle with that because the Lord has delivered you from it. That's not what the deliverance is. New believers, one of the big stumbling blocks is they will think, if I accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior, all this is going to go away. And when it doesn't, they think there's something wrong. I remember seeing back in the day, you'd see people in church and they'd come up to the front and be like, I accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior. And 6 months later, they're going back to the front again because they think it didn't take. They want to rededicate themselves. They want to just make sure that Jesus understands they've turned their heart towards him. That is a person who mistakenly thought, and it's not their fault. Somebody should have explained it to them. This goes back to that thing about sharing the light, about sharing the information. When somebody goes up to the front and says, preacher, I've accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior, instead of scheduling the baptism, they should sit down and explain this to them. It doesn't mean that all these things that you know were wrong in your life, suddenly they're not a problem anymore. They've gone away. You're delivered. It ain't working like that. They're still going to be there. It's great. You accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior. But you know what? All that stuff you're struggling with, still going to be here. Still going to be there tomorrow. You're still going to be there. Now you get to start working. Now the work starts. Now the work starts. You know, every journey starts with the first step. You're going to start making the first step. Now the work starts. Seeking the Lord, coming to understand him, making those steps over and over. It's a long, arduous process. It doesn't end until this life ends. And that's the reality of it. It's all in the process. It's all in the process. Now, to circle back here to our listener question about people, and if you don't know, you know, you're not as responsible. We know we're in our faith. We know we're saved by faith. That is our central thing. We're saved by faith in Jesus Christ. And we do more. Faith is action. So we have more action with more faith. If you have more understanding, it's going to translate in doing more. Those of little understanding aren't going to do much. It's not like, oh, well, they get more of a pass from sin. It means they're not going to accomplish much because their faith isn't amounting to as much. I hope that makes sense. Your faith is always going to translate into some form of action, whether it's how you live your life or what you speak, when you have opportunities to share some information, whatever the case may be. It is always going to translate into some sort of action. It's not a matter of... It's not a matter of saying, well, the person doesn't know any better. They're not going to be as guilty. Again, always want to shed ourselves of this courtroom idea of what judgment is. You know, because at some point they are going to know better. And that's going to be a harsh thing to come to terms with. But we all have to come to terms with it. With more faith, we're coming to terms with this going through the process. Not of, well, that guy didn't know any better, so he has more of an excuse before the Lord. The excuses are going to go away because he will know better on the day of judgment when he stands before the Lord. Then all of a sudden, it's going to be like, oh my gosh, you know, and having to deal with that. The person who does know better, yes, they have more of an obligation to do more in the Lord, but that's part of the process that they're not going to have to face that. I hope that makes sense. If you have more faith, you're going to accomplish more. It's always translated. Again, we're saved by faith, and that faith is going to translate into more deals. I'm looking at the time. I don't really have time to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway because this was something I actually had jotted down last week, and I didn't get into it. But I think it can be relevant to what we're discussing here. And so I'm going to try to do it real fast, which is probably a mistake. It's probably an error, but I'm going to try to do this real fast because I think it's relevant and kind of ties in to what we're talking about. Let's look in real quick. We're going to look in the book of Luke, chapter 18. We're going to do verses 35 through 43. And as you can tell by how slow I'm talking, I'm trying to find it here as I go. Like I said, I hadn't planned to get into this. And it came to pass that as he was come nigh unto Jericho, a certain blind man sat by the wayside begging. And hearing the multitude pass by, he asked what it meant. And they told him, "The Jesus of Nazareth passeth by." And he cried, saying, "Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me." And they which went before rebuked him, that he should hold his peace. But he cried so much more, "Thou son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stood and commanded him to be brought unto him. And when he was come near, he asked him, saying, "What will that I should do unto thee?" And he said, "Lord, that I may receive my sight." And Jesus said unto him, "Receive thy sight, thy faith hath saved thee." And immediately he received his sight and followed him, glorifying God. And all the people, when they saw it, gave praise unto God. Now, Jesus said unto him, "Receive thy sight, thy faith hath saved thee." What was the question here is, what was the blind man's faith? What was the blind man's faith? Well, I think it's most people, when they read that, the blind man really emotionally, because for some reason we translate everything into emotionalism now. And it's a topic for another time, but we translate everything into emotionalism. When we read that, I think most people, when they read that, when Jesus told them, "Your faith, you know, has healed you, you're saved, your faith has saved you," they think that that blind man emotionally really believed it was going to happen. He absolutely 100% believed Jesus can make me see again. I'm going to see. And that was the blind man's faith. And I'm telling you, I 100% believe that is incorrect. The blind man's faith was that when Jesus asked him, "What do you want? What is it that you want me to do for you?" The blind man said, "I want to see." Now, they've already rebuked him once and told him, "Shut up." When the blind man, when Jesus stood and asked him, "What do you want?" You imagine what he was probably thinking. If you imagine for a moment, and I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to apply here. If you imagine for a moment that everything in that man's mind at the time was, you know, he can't make me see. You know, I mean, he's asking me what I want. And you know, I could just ask for some money or maybe something to eat. That's something that he could do. How dare I? If I ask that I want to see and he can't do it, it's going to embarrass him. All these people, all his followers around him, they're liable to drag me out here and kick my ass for embarrassing the master saying I want to see. Who the hell am I to tell the master that I want to see? I mean, that's what I want. Yeah, but I mean, come on, let's be real. It make you see. I've been blind like this forever. Am I going to make me see, man? I should probably just say, "Can you put some money in my cup here?" Or maybe have your disciples give me a loaf of bread. I haven't eaten. Maybe if you have some wine, give me some wine and some bread and I can eat and drink it and I feel a little better. I'd like some clean clothes, Master. Clean me up. I would suppose a reasonable way to look at this is the things that were going through this blind man's mind. What should I? I'm on the spot now. I made a big scene. Now the master has stopped. All these people, he blind, and he knows all these people are there. He can feel their eyes on him. Everybody's looking at him. The master says, what do you want? Jesus said, what is it that you want me to do for you? And all these things emotionally, he's like, man, I can imagine the emotional turmoil going through this man's mind. And what was his faith? His faith wasn't that emotionally he's thinking, I 100% believe. No, he's thinking, I should ask for something reasonable. I should ask for something I can get. His faith was that when he opened his mouth, he said, I want to see. You ask me what I want, Lord, I want to see. Knowing that that's probably not going to happen. It's a mistake to equate faith with emotionalism. With, oh, I emotionally, 100% emotionally believe it can happen. I don't think that's what the guy thought. His faith was that when he asked, he finally, when it came time for him to speak, when it came time for him to speak, he said, I want to see. I want to see. That's what I want, Master. That's what I want, Lord. I want to see. Jesus always says, Jesus said, you know, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you can do these great things. It doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean you get superpowers. What it means is, what are you going to do? What are you going to ask for? This man had enough faith. It was probably small, but it was still enough that when push came to shove, when the moment came, everything probably in his mind emotionally screaming at him, don't, you're fixing to embarrass yourself, and these people liable get mad and drag you out of here and beat on you, and there you're going to be. But it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, he had enough faith that when Jesus said, what do you want? He had enough faith to say, I want to see. That's how we know how much faith he had. That's how we know he had enough faith to actually have the nerve to say, I want to see. That took some nerve. It took some faith. Speaking and saying, I want to see. Knowing that probably emotionally, this isn't going to go well. I'm probably going to wind up with nothing, mocked, ridiculed, kicked down. If I'd shut up and just say, give me a piece of bread, they might do that. But what I really want, Lord, I want to see. I want to see. It took that faith. That was his faith. He took that action and said, I want to see. And that's why Jesus said, your faith is healed. Your faith was put into action. You actually had the nerve, despite all of your emotionalism screaming at you, telling you otherwise, you had the nerve to stand up and say, I want to see. Your faith has healed you. Your faith has saved you. Every day that you make the choice to try to know God more, to grow in understanding, in the face of the mockers, in the face of this world that's constantly telling you to go chase after this, go chase after that, this is pleasurable, this will be great, go do this, plunge yourself off into this. Look, everybody else is doing this. You should go do it too. And every day that you deny that and make the decision, your emotions don't matter. Every day that you make the decision, no, I'm going to try to grow in the Lord, that is your faith. That is the action that you are taking by making that decision, like the blind man making the decision to go ahead and stick his neck all the way out there, push all in and ask to see. That is your faith every day that you make that decision. And those decisions accumulated, that's who you are. And that should be your focus, not on the things you're not on the emotionalism, but on who you actually are. And in this, you're going to grow. It's going to grow your faith. Anyway, we're going way long. I got to wrap up on that note. I could ramble. I could make the whole show 1 hour of this. Sometimes I've thought of doing that, but we're not doing that right now. We're going to wrap up on that note. I really appreciate all of you stopping by. I do. I appreciate all of you. I hope you got something out of all the show. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.